Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, November the 30th. And welcome to our commentary. Welcome to the last day of November as we're winding out 2022. Thanksgiving is behind us now. Christmas is ahead of us. Well, today we're going to talk about a couple of issues, but I want to begin with a post that I have over at the American Thinker on Wednesday morning. You know, if you follow myself over at the American Thinker, it's usually on the right-hand side. But if you don't get around to watching it or seeing it on American Thinker, you can go to my blog or a Twitter, and you can check out the post over there. But this post is about voters and a very interesting poll that they took where they interviewed thousands of voters, and they're asking the question, do you want more drilling? Do you want the United States to do more drilling? And huge numbers say yes. And I think people are beginning to connect this. They didn't do it during the midterm elections, I will confess. They did it in some parts of the country, not in others. But they didn't connect this issue that as well as they should have during the midterm. But I think now with the presidential election 18 months, 2 years away, I think this will become a major campaign issue and a platform issue. And I think you will see whoever the Republican nominee for president is, that candidate is going to make a big deal about drilling because, you know, if we learned anything during the Trump years is that he had a good energy policy. It was an energy policy that focused on making the United States independent when it came to oil. And he did that. We did that under President Trump. We're not today, which is why we have to, you know, go and make deals with Venezuela and go to Saudi Arabia and try to get them to pump more oil. We didn't have to do that when President Trump was in the White House, and that's because we had an energy policy that made sense. We don't have one today. So the voters want more drilling, and I think they're right on this one. We should have more drilling. Well, the last day of November began with a not great jobs report. We didn't create as many jobs in the last month as we were planning to. We were planning about 200,000 new jobs, and it came in a little bit over 100,000. Now, those are private sector jobs, but nevertheless, it's another indication that the hiring is starting to slow down and that companies are starting to think twice about hiring people. A lot of it, of course, has to do with the fact that, you know, there's a recession coming. And companies are beginning to realize that a recession means you need less people. So this is going to become a very fascinating topic for the Biden administration in 2023. And that is, how do you deal with this recession? How do you deal with the fact that more and more companies are going to shut down and there will be layoffs? And that's not, you know, politically a good thing to say the least. One of the big stories, of course, is the railroad strike. I have a feeling that they're going to fix it. And that's just my gut feeling. I just think that not fixing it and having an actual railroad strike would be such a mess for the country. I mean, it would devastate the American economy. Even if it's 1 or 2 days, they would backlog a lot of deliveries. It would create a lot of problems right before Christmas time when there's a lot of, you know, stuff going back and forth, a lot of deliveries. So I have a feeling they'll work something out. But it's... you know, there's going to be a lot of unhappy unions if they're being forced to do something. And there's probably going to be a little bit of a problem between Democrats and some of these private unions because the Democrats are supposed to be the party of the unions. And here they are. They may be joining with the federal government to basically force the union to take an offer. So it's not going to get pretty. But again, the alternative of having a rail strike is just a massive problem. Well, over at CNN, apparently some people are starting to get some layoff notices. Now, the first ones, I guess, getting it are the so-called contributors, and then apparently other employees will be getting it later. Look, I don't like to see people get laid off. It's a terrible situation for them and for their families, so I'm not cheering this. But the fact is that CNN, they brought this on themselves by the crazy journalism and crazy programming that they've been doing for the last few years, where I think they went crazy about Trump and they became the anti-Trump network. And it was Trump 24/7. Now, obviously, Trump was the president of the United States, so you had to cover him. But the way they did it was so one-sided that I think they turned off lots and lots of people. I don't think they're getting those audiences back. I think most of those audiences have moved on. And what CNN has to do is basically clean house. They just have to basically, you know, get rid of all their faces and move them out and bring in some new people, bring in some new faces, new programs, and focus on that and then change your image that way. Nobody at CNN right now is going to save CNN because they're all part of the problem. So this is a little bit like a baseball team, you know, when they've been losing for a few years and the owner fires everybody and brings in a new management team and you've got a major makeover of the baseball team. That's what you got to do at CNN. That's the only way they're going to get back in the game. They're not getting back in the game by moving Bob Lemon or whatever his name is from midnight or from primetime to morning. That's not how they're going to save their network. They're going to save their network by getting rid of all of their faces and starting from scratch with a brand new team and a brand new message and a brand new idea of who CNN is. So again, we're not happy. I'm not happy about the layoffs. I'm not, you know, cheering for that, but the network had it coming. They've been a very bad network really for the last couple of years, unless you hate Trump. And if you hated Trump, then you love the network. But, you know, most people are not into loving Trump or hating Trump. I just think they want to hear the news. Twitter is once again in the news. It's amazing what's happened to Twitter since Elon Musk bought the organization. Look, again, I'm not an investor in Twitter, but I like what Elon Musk is doing. He's trying to make Twitter into what many of us thought it should have been all along, which is a place where you go and share ideas and you print this or you print that. And if you don't like what I print, well, if you don't like what I print, then you do it somewhere else. If you like what I do, you follow me. I mean, that's the way Twitter was designed and that's the way it did not go. I mean, Twitter became nothing but one-sided. I mean, the peak of this one-sided happened when they wouldn't run that story on Hunter Biden. Now, all of them are admitting now that it was a mistake. But that was a mistake that had an effect on the 2020 elections. It certainly did. That story been devastating for the Biden campaign in 2020. So, you know, Twitter got involved in politics, but it got involved in politics always in one direction. And when you do that, you lose credibility. And that's what happened to Twitter. And that's what Elon Musk is trying to change that. He's trying to make it better. And we wish him the best. You know, I went back into Twitter. I started posting my podcast and my American Thinker post over at Twitter. I started that a week or so ago. And I started because of Elon Musk. I started because of him, because I think what he's doing is correct, and I hope that he succeeds in what he's doing. There's a very interesting case before the Supreme Court, and it has to do with the U.S.-Mexico border. And what you have in that case are some states like Texas and Louisiana, I believe there's others, who are suing the federal government over the border. And the main argument is that the federal government is not doing their job. That's the main argument, that they're not doing their job. Now, traditionally, the courts have always sided with the federal government when it came to the border. And they say, look, it's a federal issue. Immigration, the border, that's a federal issue. So historically, the courts have done that. But it's interesting how they're going to react now. I'm not sure how they're going to react, because Texas and Louisiana, as well as others, they are correct in what they're saying. What we have on the border is a mess. The federal government is not enforcing the law. And all of this is costing states, whether it's Texas or Louisiana. I mean, even the states where these people are being transferred to, those states have to pay for receiving these people and supporting them and putting them in school and so on. So I don't know how this case is going to turn out, but I will make a little prediction today. I wouldn't be surprised if the Supreme Court says that Texas and Louisiana are right and then turns around and calls on the federal government to enforce immigration law on the border. Now, whether the federal government does it, that's another story. But that that is the kind of issue, again, that could play very well in the 2024 presidential election. But I can tell you that what we have on the border right now is a total complete mess, a total complete mess, and it has to be fixed. I have a note here from my friend Rocket 99 saying you should do radio. Well, thank you very much for that, Rocket. I do a podcast if you want to check that out from time to time. I do a podcast over in Blog Talk Radio. So if you want to check that out, please do. But I love radio. I love video. I discovered the video about a year ago from my good friend Aaron Clary. He was the one who introduced me to this format. And I love doing this. And we combine the two, the podcast and the video cast. Well, today we remember a few people on this November the 30th. We remember Dick Clark, who hosted American Bandstand for like 40 years here in the United States. He was born on this day in 1929, passed away in 2012. Dick Clark, every Saturday, for those of us of my generation, maybe your generation, every Saturday at noon on ABC, there was American Bandstand and Dick Clark bringing you the top hits of the week. He was absolutely great doing it. Mark Twain, that's not his real name, but Mark Twain was born on this day in 1835, passed away in 1910. I think his real name is Samuel Clemens, but that's just a guess. I'm just remembering from my days in high school when we read some of his books. And then, of course, the biggest thing today we remember is that Prime Minister Winston Churchill, the great Winston Churchill, one of the great men of the 20th century, was born on this day in 1874. He passed away in 1965. And, you know, when you talk about the 20th century, you obviously talk about many people. But Churchill is certainly among the top five or six people, I think, of the 20th century. Not only was he great, was a great leader, great prime minister, but he was also great with words. And nobody knew how to use the English language better than Winston Churchill when he was giving a speech or when he was answering a question. He just knew how to use words, and he knew how to use the language in a way that few people can do. I don't know if you can learn that. Maybe you can learn what Churchill learned. I don't know. I don't know how much of it was just a natural instinct that he had, or how much of it was because he studied and read a great deal. I don't know the answer. But he was a master doing it. Winston Churchill, 1874, 1965. And if you ever want to watch a good movie, watch that movie, Young Winston. It came out in the 1970s. It's the story of young Winston Churchill when he was a man, a young man in England. And, of course, his mother, who was an American woman, was also featured in that film. It's a great story. It's a great story. Young Winston. Check it out. I think you're going to love it. Well, goodbye to the month of November. December is around the corner. Thank you for listening. And this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.